I was expecting that ending to go again, Gary. We're running out of time, I guess. I noticed that Chris over here is wearing a Bula shirt. Yeah, I did mine last week. This was Tie Sunday for me. Next week, maybe I'll get that. So we'll see how that goes. All right. A preacher that I highly respected. Just a second, let me get everything in order here. I don't have everything in order. Now maybe I do. Heard him say on several occasions, he said, a preacher is not only responsible for what he says, but for what other people think he says. And I thought that was unfair at first, but as I thought about it and experienced life, I find that is totally true. James chapter 3, verse 1 says, don't many of you be teachers. This is a little paraphrase, but it's not much of one. Don't many of you be teachers because you know you're going to be, teachers will be judged or harshly or strictly or greater. And a lot of times that's applied to God judging, but if you look at the context, I don't think it's God's judgment. It's the audience judgment. Be careful what you're talking about, what you say. And so as I've preached over the years, I've considered that and tried to make corrections when I've needed to make corrections. And it won't be the last time or that this happens. But recently a survey was taken about the journey. And one of the points that came out was that a number of people could not see where the study of Ephesians and the sermon was connecting to the journey point. And so I thought about that. I had several discussions this past week, prayed about a lot, and I thought, you know, if it's that confusing, what I need to do is just stop the textual study. I thought I dropped something. Stop the textual study of Ephesians and just go into the topical study of each journey point as we come to it, and that way we'll clear up any kind of confusion. So that's today. It was too far. I was too late in the week for to make any adjustment. So I'm going to end Ephesians today. Not Ephesians. I want to end chapter 1 of Ephesians today. And then we'll go into the topics of in the following weeks that I present the lessons. But as Mike was so said in such a great way, talking about this superiority of Christ, it's quite amazing that this passage of verse 19 and really verse 18 to get it into a sentence through 23 speaks so clearly of the superiority of Christ that I don't think you can miss it. Now, Jim Norville says, some people can't see through a ladder, so I guess you could miss it if you're one of those folks, but I don't see how you can miss the supremacy, the superiority of Christ as you read this last section of the first chapter of Ephesians. He also was talking about how the inward, and I had some notes here that I'm not going to go into, but the inward and the upward, well, let me go back. The inward and the upward, and this is my poor attempt at putting it together, are so closely connected. They have to be closely connected. That if you only have the inward, all we have is a good social club. That's it. It's because of the upward that we are bound together by what we just did in the communion, the blood of Christ, and that we even have the inward. It's been stated many times that this community is so diverse in so many ways that the only thing that can bring us together is Christ and what he's done for us, and not any kind of social or economic or whatever connection that we have. It's only through the blood of Christ that he does that. So I'm not going to belabor that point because, Mike, you did so well. We're looking at the journey point today of the supremacy or the superiority of Christ and that characteristic of being Christ-like. Now, as we do that, I want to, There you go. Thank you. I want you to come into Ephesus with me. 1 year ago, about this time, I had just returned from Turkey, and one of the places I went in Turkey was Ephesus. And I took this picture from the top of the stadium, amphitheater, thank you. From the top of the amphitheater, where the riot took place, where they were screaming, "Great is the god, the goddess Artemis or Diana." And from the top of that amphitheater, you can look down what is called Harbor Road. That's the road that goes out to where the planes are, where once the harbor was. The harbor, and in the distance there, you can actually see the ocean if it was a clear picture. But as you went into, there's two ways of coming into Ephesus, and this was one by boat. If you came in from the west, if you came from the east, you came in through the Herculean Gate up to the east. And as you came in this particular road, on both sides you have all these columns. And there would be stores, but besides the stores that you would have, there were goddesses and gods displayed. Some of them were emperor worship. Some of it was the different types of gods. If you came down this road coming toward us and took a left, you would pass the stadium. And just a little bit past the stadium was one of the greatest temples of all time. It was one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, the Temple of Artemis. And there you'd see the worship of her and all the many things that went on. As you went through the city, you would see many of these things that are displayed here, coins that lifted up the emperor, amulets, signet rings, idols, all these different things that were designed to help people as they struggled with the powers around them. They would have magic formulas, magic arts, incantations. And whatever gave them security for the future, they would grab on to these things. The powers that controlled their lives, they would hold on to those things. And they would use these to control the powers, to manipulate the powers, so that they could get what they felt they needed. And today we do the same thing. We don't have these particular things, most of us. But there are things that people look for security. I want security. What do you look for security? A lot of times it's our jobs. Many times it's relationships, our investments, how our investments are doing, our fitness, my physical life. What are the powers that control you? What controls you? Then we go into the negative thing. All those are positive things. There's nothing wrong with investments. There's nothing wrong with relationships and so on. But then the negative things like drugs and alcohol, the things that control our lives. And as I was thinking about the powers that control the people's lives in the first century and the powers that control my life and your life or attempt to, none of those powers give permanent security. Only in Christ can we have true meaning. Lose that job, and you don't lose Christ. Lose your investments, lose your health, and there's still a power above all powers in your life. And so as we come to this, we ask the question, how do I deal with the overwhelming powers of life? Let's read together Ephesians chapter 1, and I'm going to back up to verse 18 and just read all the way through the end of the chapter. I pray also that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened in order that you may know the hope to which he has called you, the riches of his glorious inheritance in the saints, and his incomparably great power for us who believe. That power is like the working of his mighty strength which he exerted in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at his right hand in the heavenly realms, far above all rule and authority, power and dominion, every title that can be given, not only in the present age, but also in the one to come. And God placed all things under his feet and appointed him to be the head over everything for the church, which is his body, the fullness of Him who fills everything, every way. You've been around me long enough, there's more than one sermon in that passage. And there really is. What's the answer to the overwhelming powers that dominate our lives? The powers of anxiety, the powers of worry, the powers of frustration. We're surrounded by the pressures of society, peer pressure, everything calling us to conform to the ways of the world. Our media directs our thinking, television, devices directing our thinking, pushing us. These powers are pushing us in certain directions. This constant press on us to conform to the ways of the world in the way we act, the way we think, the way we respond to things. And my question is, what's the solution? What's the solution to this? And Paul gives us a solution right here. He says, the answer is knowledge. Verse 17 says, I pray that you will know Him better. And then in verse 18, he says, I pray that you may know, and then he lists several things. And what this word know means there's actually two words here using the word know in the first and the second uses of it. The first one means this practical, experiential knowledge. I pray that you will know God better through this interaction that you have with God. I pray that you will experience God better. And the second know is in your mind know, where you can almost physically or sometimes physically see something that leads you to a spiritual truth. And the way to maybe make this where you can understand it is when you have ever said, now I see what you say. Now I see what you're saying. And I hope by the end of this lesson, some of you will say, now I see what you're saying, because that's what God is calling us to actually see this. The knowledge that He gives is God-given. It said that the glorious Father may give you this. The knowledge is Christ-centered. We're going to read that in verse 22 again in just a few minutes. But the answer to the overwhelming powers of life is based in the superiority of Christ. Knowing that. Knowing it through experience and knowing it to the point where you say, now I see what you're saying. When we allow anything or anyone to be superior to Christ, we will be less than what God has intended for us. Practically, we will be other-focused. When we're over other-focused, our emotions are triggered by these other powers, whether it's a thing or a person. We begin to place these things above God, and really those things become our gods. They become the center of our life. They become the focal point of our lives. We lift our worries up. We lift our concerns up. We don't realize this, but I hope you know. I hope you can see this. We lift our concerns, we lift our worries up, and we gaze in awe at our frustrations and our anxieties and our worries and our concerns. And we don't realize it, but we're just like the first century people in Ephesus who would bow down toward an idol or gaze up in awe at the temple of Artemis. We gaze up in awe at the problems that surround us. We worship them. And unless our lives are directed by God and by Christ, we will, all these inferior things will consume us. We will live lives of fear. We will live lives of frustration. The stresses of our lives will guide our lives and our anxieties. So the question is, the answer is knowledge. What are we supposed to know? Three things. Paul gives us three things that we are to know. And this particular one here, the word he uses here for know, is this physical seeing to a spiritual reality where you will say, should say at the end, ah, now I see what you mean. His prayer is that you will at the end of this lesson say, now I see what you say. What you're saying. He says, I pray that you will know the hope. Know the hope to which he has called you. Here's what's happened. God has called us out of something into something. He called us out of the world and into a fellowship with him. He called us out of a relationship with the world and into a relationship with him. And of course, the upward and the inward work, because now we're in a relationship with one another. Here's a thought that came to my mind this week. You will live toward your hope. You will live toward your hope. Everyone has a hope. Everyone has a hope. And you will live toward that. You will move toward your hope. And so the question is, do you know what your hope is? Do you know what your hope is? It's either something uncertain. I wish this will happen. I really want this to happen. I hope this is true. It's either that kind of hope or it's a certain hope. I'm certain of this, and this is biblical hope. I'm certain. I'm based on this. I'm convicted of the truth of the gospel, and that's the hope to which I move. An example, if you believe you're a product of evolution, that we just happened some way, that's your hope. And you're living towards your hope. You're moving towards your hope. That's the point where you've placed your trust. That's the point where you've placed your direction in life. You're moving toward that. And your hope is in a death of oblivion. I just hope that when I die, there isn't a God. And that I just go into nothing. That's my hope. And the result of that is despair. You have nothing to look forward to. There's an emotional result from your hope. Something happens to us emotionally. We're triggered and we have feelings. So think about your feelings. What's the primary feeling of your life? When you wake up in the morning, what emotions are going on in your life? If you're living in fear, remember that's you're living towards your hope. Something that you hope for is driving you to fear. If it's depression, if it's anxiety, if it's frustration, if it's anger, if it's any of those things, you need to say, where am I placing my hope? Where's my hope? Because my direction is fear. My direction is anger. My direction is frustration. And so you need to look at your life and say, where's my hope? Where am I placing my hope? Because that's the direction I'm going. I feel very badly about a man that I reached out to years ago. He was an atheist. One of my last conversations with him, not my last, but one of the last, he had found out he was sick and probably dying, and he said, well, you know, it's just, we're all just worm food. I think that was the term, worm food. It's hard to say. And later on, we had another discussion. And he did die. And I think, you know, could I have done more? Could I have said more? Yes, sure. Every time you fail, you always think, I could have done this, I could have done that, I wish. But where did he place his hope? It's in a false God. Our hope is in the eternal home, a resurrected body, a full redemption. And that's why Peter called this a living hope. It's not just a hope, it's a living hope. And in Titus and in Hebrews, it talks about a blessed and certain hope. That's the hope that we have. The hope of our calling means that the life I am called to is a life that has meaning. I begin to see the world through the eyes of Jesus. I see suffering, my personal sin in general, through the lens of a sovereign and a mighty God. I see my struggles, my trials, my hurts, my sufferings, my setbacks, through the power of a mighty God that's working in me. I know I have a work to do. I have a work to do for God. It's not for anyone else, including me. I live in hope. I pray that you will know the hope of your calling. and that you will know the riches of God's inheritance. This is marvelous. There's a whole sermon here, by the way. It's actually a series of sermons here. That could mean the riches of God's inheritance, which is your salvation. It can be translated that way. I think it is meant a different way because it can be translated this way. It is the riches of God's possession, what God's inheritance is, what He possesses. He's saying, I pray that you will know what God has, what He counts as His precious treasure, what He counts as His own, what He counts as His inheritance. Oh, He owns everything, but there's something special that He has, that He holds on to. And that's His saints. That's His Christians. I play a game. I used to play this game with my kids, but they're too old now. They caught on to it. But I play it with my grandkids. Some of you grandparents, I'm sure, do something similar. You tell your grandchild, come here, and they won't come. You ever done that? They just kind of be shy. They won't come to you. And you want to hold them, and you want to play with them, but they're staying away from you. So what I do, and it works every time, by the way, I'll go like this. Oh, you know what I have in my hand? You know what I have? You want to see what I have in my hand? You want to see? And sometimes I have to make a noise. Do you want to see what? It's marvelous. This is wonderful. You want to see? And of course they're like, and they start coming. You want to see it? You want to? I have you. And that's what God does. You want to see what I have, God says? You don't want to see what's marvelous and wonderful? Come on. Come close. I have you. And He grabs us. He says, I want you to know. I want you to know what God knows. I want you to know that you're special in God's sight. I want you to know that you're His child. I want you to know that you're His beloved. I want you to know that you're His chosen. I want you to know that you are the one He redeemed. I want you to know you're the one He justified. I want you to know the place you have in God's sight. And if you know that, it will change your life. It will change your life. And this, I believe, is one of the greatest resistance I have when I talk to Christians. They really don't know. They don't really know that they're the beloved of God. And I want you to know, he says, His incomparable great power. I have to say this, Sandra Brown sitting here. It was 30 years ago, at least, somewhere around there. I read this passage, and she came up to me and said, you know, you pronounced that wrong. And I've never forgotten that. I always say it right now. I don't say incomparable anymore. Incomparable, that's the way you say it. I want you to know this incomparable, you cannot compare it, great power. By the way, I did look up in the dictionary, and she's right. I want you to know the supreme position, that He's far above all rule. He's greater than your anxiety. He's greater than your money concerns. He's greater than your marriage problems. He's greater than your health issues. He's greater beyond measure than any of these things. And it's for those who believe, he says, for those who walk in faith, the faith walkers. Do you believe in His superior position? Do you believe that He's greater than your situation? And then he uses in verse 19 some power words. These are great. These are power words going to into a city who believed in all the false powers. He uses these great power words, and he introduces this with in the literal surpassing greatness. In the NIV, incomparable incomparable great power is the way it pronounces there, but it's surpassing greatness. And these are rare words in the Bible. One is only used once and one is used five times. The one greatness is megathos. Mega, I put it up there so you can see it. It's big. If you say, oh, that's a mega truck. It's a big truck, right? That's the word here. And surpassing means to throw beyond here. And so you have greatness out there, and then you take it and you throw beyond greatness, something even greater. You go beyond greatness. This is greater than greater. You have greater, and this is greater than greater. He says, I want you to know these things, the superiority of Christ, where he's greater than greater. And then he uses this word power. And this is use of natural, inherent power. It's the power that everyone has, this natural power. And you think, well, what is God's natural power? I mean, what is just naturally, who is he? Everyone has a certain degree of natural power. And the word here is the word we get our word dynamite from. This is dynamite power. It's substance power. It's used of, in the first century, it was used of the magic spells. They would have magic spells, and they talk about the power of these magic spells. You know, all the books that were burned in Acts chapter 19, that was in Ephesus. Those were magic books. It's not magic trick books, by the way. It's magic incantations where they would say, I know a spell that if you say this spell, you will get what you want. Let me read you one. Here's one, a quote from one of the magic books. I conjure you all, and he's talking to the angels, by the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, this is a Jewish mysticism magic, that you obey my authority completely, and you give me favor and power, dynamite, victory and strength, that's another word that's used here, before all, listen to this, small men and great, as well as gladiators, glad you put that in, soldiers, civilian, women, girls, boys, and everybody, quickly, quickly. Because the power of Sabaoth, the closing of Eloi, the might of Adonai. And what they did is they had to do certain things, have a certain sacrifice, a certain whatever. And I experienced this in Fiji. I saw people do this often where they would get a chicken, get a bottle of rum, get this, do that, and do all these things, and then say these things and put it up at a certain time at night or when the moon's full or whatever. And if you do all these things, this will, all this people will quickly, quickly be under your control. Power. And then the workings. This is where we get our word energy from. This is the realization of this power, this dynamis power. This is power expressed in the magic words world. It was, hey, this will work. This will work. If you do this, this will work. And here he says, God says, this is according to God's working. He is doing the work, God's active energy. And then two words he uses, all these are in the same sentence, same verse, where he uses really two synonymous words, might and strength, but they're a little bit different, as all synonyms are. Force and strength that is dominant is might. Absolute strength, force and able to overcome immediate resistance is might. And he says here that I pray that you know this, and this power that God has and he gives you is the working of his mighty strength, which he exerted in Christ Jesus. What does this power do? Let's just look at it very quickly. It raised Jesus from the dead. The power that God gives you is the same power that God used to raise Jesus from the dead. As a Christian, you have resurrection power. It seated him at the right hand of God. It placed him above all other names and made him superior or more powerful than any other power or thing or event or circumstance or situation. It places him at the head or the guiding force of the church, and it makes the church full of the same power. That doesn't minimize the pain and hurt in our lives. I think sometimes we're so shallow as teachers where we just say, y'all, let go and let God. And that doesn't comfort anyone who's in a great deal of pain or a great deal of hurt. I call us not to live by what I call the meme standards. You know, you read all these memes that come up over the Facebook and everything, and little cute sayings, and we just kind of live by cute instead of by the power of God. We live by Google knowledge instead of what he called where the wisdom and revelation of God comes from. We're satisfied with Google knowledge instead of the wisdom of God. This comes from a living, active, dynamic, spirit-filled relationship with Christ. When you have that, you have the power. This is why there's a prayer. Paul said, I pray that you may know. And I thought long about this too. I pray that you may know. He did not give you 10 steps how to get there. You notice this? He didn't say the 10 ways to get to this. He said, I pray that you'll know. There isn't a program to enhance your relationship. It's not get off and get close to the Lord and do this and read this book or whatever. He says, I pray that you'll have this experiential knowledge. I pray that you'll see. I pray that your eyes, the eyes of your heart will open wide to your life circumstances. What's going in your life right now that's driving you into a deeper relationship with Christ? What's going on in your life that's driving you in that direction? And I wanted to point this out. God's mighty force. We use all these huge power words, but God's mighty force is most often seen in a gentle touch. Think about your lives. I want the Red Sea miracle in my life. Don't you? Things are going on, you just like, God, fix it. You want the Red Sea to part and everything to be fixed. But if you look at it over your life on the day, what I'm going through today, I don't necessarily see God there in a powerful way. It's only when I step back and look over 30 years and go, wow, that situation here that I was struggling with, God used that. I never saw that when I was in the midst of it. And it's God's gentle touch, his gentle movement. It's a little step by little step that we can look back over the years and say, wow, God is powerful. Paul does not give a specific plan or application here. But he's in faith and trusting these Christians over to God. He's saying, the God who is of supreme power, I pray that he will open up their eyes, that they will be cooperative with God's Spirit as he teaches them these things. That's the best application, is just to pray for you, that your heart eyes will be open. Recently, a situation came up in my life where I made the decision, I need to be a gentle peacemaker. Why? Because it's easier on me. No. Because I don't want conflict. No. Because it's a good way to manipulate the situation and get what I want. No. It's because the Supreme One, the Superior One, the One who is head over all things, calls me to be that way at that moment. Call me to be that way. In that particular circumstance, I believe that's what God wanted me to focus on. And other circumstances that I recently went through also, God called me to teach and correct and exhort. And I had to know had the wisdom to know at what point do I teach or rebuke and at what point am I the peacemaker. And that's hard to do. But we make those decisions not based on my certain circumstance, my current circumstance, and say, well, this will help me if I do this. But it's based on what Christ, if we're being Christ-like and we're following him, it's like, well, what does he want me to do? Do you understand? See what I'm saying? That's how we decide. I can only know this by being in God's word and seeking his wisdom through prayer, the advice of godly people, conversation, being with fellow Christians. That's how you get this. You don't go off into the mountains and pray for 40 days to get your answer. You spend 40 days going through the word, and when the circumstance comes up, then you'll know what to do. I can teach, I can encourage, I can point to the source, I can preach, I can exhort, I can correct, I can be an example, I can advise, I can counsel, I can pray, I can train, I can rebuke, but I cannot make you seek God. Only you can do that. You have to be the one to decide to do that. Can you grasp what God has done for you? Can you know and believe all those things that we looked at in the first part of the chapter, that he's done all those things for you? Can you grasp that? And this is what Paul's prayer is. I pray that you will know these things. It includes everything God has done for us in the past, how God's working with us right now in the present, and what he will do in the future. Let me sum up by reading you my, what I call my expanded paraphrase that sometimes helps us see in a context what I've been saying in a 35-minute sermon, pull it down just to a few words. This is verse 19 through 23. And what is this but a greater greatness beyond greatness of the inherent power of God? This power is directed toward those who faith walk. This power comes by the way of his energetic accomplishments in the absolute might of his able strength to overcome any immediate threat or circumstance. This he demonstrated to prove he can mightily work in your life when he raised Jesus from the dead. God's mighty strength placed Christ in a mighty place, seated at his right hand in the reality of the heavenly realms. Christ's position is greatly higher than anything, over all kings or principal positions, over anything or anyone that bears authoritative rule, or any natural power, or anything that would dominate and force allegiance, over every name that declares itself a high status. And not only now as we live on this earth, but this is forever, right into the future reality that is coming. And God placed everything so far below him that we could say they could only be seen if he lifts his feet. He is the guiding force, the principal mind over everything for those called out of the world and into what we call his body. He is the superabundance, filling us all to our fullest capacity. May God bless us as we live for the Supreme One. If anyone needs to respond to an invitation, our elders will be here for you to express any need that you have. Let's do that as we stand and sing.